Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Did you say Hairmaster?
No, you dimwit. Airmaster.
Caremaster?
No, Airmaster.
Daremaster?
Clean your ears out. I said Airmaster.
Stairmaster?
Oops, don't try that one. It's probably trademarked by someone else. Airmaster.
Ha ha, got you on that one. I said Stairmaster. S-T-A-R-E, Master. Tearmaster?
I'm going to tear you. Airmaster!
Oh, I get it. Airmaster.
Yes, Airmaster.
But what do they do?
Airmaster Aerator, the patented aerator that makes a difference. More than an aerator, a complete waste treatment system. Airmaster Aerator.
The following column was written by Jim Thompson. I'm Chuck Swan, reading it for Jim. Jim titled the column, Energy Trends 2019, and here's what Jim has to say about that. If you have read my columns for a while, you know that for many years I have been saying all energy is political. Let me assure you, this reality has not changed, particularly when tied into discussions concerning climate change, global warming, and similar subjects, energy discussions are more political than ever. Think about it. What are the drivers of concern to any company? The number one driver is growth of sales, followed closely by the related topic of besting the competition. Can you give me one good reason why any company would buck the generally perceived ideas about energy consumption, energy's relation to climate change, or anything else in this area that might go against the, shall we say, common knowledge in society? Suppose a learned scientist at a major energy company, using the best science known to humankind, develops irrefutable evidence that there is absolutely a connection between fossil fuel consumption and global warming. Do you think that company is going to tell the world about it? Of course not. That would be like a tobacco company announcing, without government encouragement, that nicotine is addictive and cigarettes cause cancer. The public relations department will not be notified of this breakthrough, and the scientist will probably be banished to an oil rig in the North Sea. So we see advertisements in print, on television, and in other media that send the message that energy company XYZ is the leader in developing products and services to mitigate global warming. All of this is applauded by XYZ's board of directors, for their job is A, to look out for the stock price, and B, make sure no bad news, which could tank the stock price, ever escapes from the hallowed halls of XYZ. Now let's look at this from another point of view. Ms. Public is already awake and feels she is savvy about energy, environment, global climate change conditions, and so forth. She reads only the popular press that agrees with her views. Anything else is fake news or fringe writings from nut jobs. For a long time, she didn't think much about energy company XYZ, but recently she has noticed their ads, indeed their quasi-public service announcements, about what XYZ is doing to mitigate climate change. She smiles, and although still not quite trusting them, she is encouraged that they are finally awakening and becoming responsible. XYZ's propaganda, message, is actually reinforcing the generally perceived state of environmental conditions for all of us. We feel good about it, and we buy our energy needs from XYZ because they are doing something. XYZ admitted a link between climate change and energy usage, confirming for Ms. Public what she knew all along. About time, she thinks. Likewise, ABC University is in cahoots with XYZ's posture, for ABC is all about raising more money. Doing real scientific investigation has become secondary. Just like XYZ, they don't want to do anything to upset the gravy train. We send our kids and grandkids to ABC because they get it. Now, Ms. Public is being reinforced on all sides that her views are correct, that major enterprises have seen the light and are marching in lockstep with her views and objectives. 1984 has arrived. Notice there was not one test tube dirtied to make everyone feel good about energy here. Oh, there may be some scientists that still have consciences and would like to see a little more assuring work, but just to make sure they know where their thinking must be, they discreetly post a January shot of the aforementioned North Sea oil rig in their cubicles. This, children, is how we feel good about conditions around us, including energy trends in 2019, without ever bothering to dust off the gas chromatograph or electron microscope. I hope your safety program is grounded more in reality than what I have just described. Work at safety. Broken bones or lacerations are not imagined. They are real. Be safe, and we will talk next week. Nip Impressions is written by Jim Thompson and is copyright 2019, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved. The following column was written by Jim Thompson. I'm Chuck Swan, reading it for Jim. Jim's title for this column is Historical Energy Trends. And here's what Jim has to say about that. Sometimes it is worthwhile to look back on where we have come from, to assess where we are and where we are going. Items in my garage may give us a clue. First, there is my air compressor. Ceiling mounted and connected to the distribution header I put in my home in order to have compressed air on each floor without having to drag around an air compressor. It is rated at 5 horsepower. Take the cheap plastic cover off the top of the unit and peer at the motor. You will find a smallish motor, reminiscent of the one I built for a science fair about 60 years ago. However, if you look at the RPM at which it spins and do the calculations, you will indeed find its output to be 5 horsepower. On the garage floor, less than 15 feet away, you will observe a cast iron contraption unfamiliar in this day. It is a cast iron engine, single cylinder, water-cooled, with 2 flywheels about 24 inches in diameter. It is an economy brand name gasoline engine, approximately 100 years old. Economy sold these under several brand names. This one likely came off a cement mixer. It produces 1.5 horsepower, according to the nameplate, and weighs approximately 300 pounds. Sitting near the economy is a Maytag Air one-cylinder engine. They also made 2-cylinder ones. It has a kickstarter, weighs about 15 pounds, and produces about 1/4 horsepower. These were sold integral to Maytag washing machines, sold to rural areas where there was no electricity. Again, about 100 years ago. Conveniently, these came with a flexible steel exhaust pipe that the lady of the house could hang outside an open window in order to avoid asphyxiation. Then, hanging from a support beam of the mezzanine in my garage, is a David Bradley chainsaw, roughly 60 years old. I bought this at an antique tractor show a dozen years or so ago. It is not the one, but it is identical to one my dad bought new around 1959-1960. It was state-of-the-art at the time, had a 26-inch cutting bar, and weighed 56 pounds. Don't know the horsepower rating. We have folks entering our industry now who were born around 1996. Except for the air compressor I described above, they have likely never seen any of these other motive sources, even though all of them were designed and built since 1900. I thought it worthwhile to show how quickly we have improved energy sources, which in turn has caused a tremendous decrease in energy usage. Modern materials and modern designs have caused this tremendous improvement. Not so long ago, many items were made of cast iron because it was cheap. Flinging cast iron around in the air, and paper machine dryer cans are an excellent example of this, which the Light Green Machine Institute has been fighting for years. Today, most designs are done with finite element analysis, so extra materials that used to be incorporated because the strength calculations were too cumbersome to do by hand has been eliminated. Other experiences have resulted in even more energy savings when it comes to things that spin and turn. No doubt there are energy savings ideas on the horizon, but many big gains have been made in the last 50 years. This is worth knowing as we move forward. For safety this week, more compact, lighter weight designs have meant better safety is inherently built in. Be safe, and we will talk next week.
Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
From bales to cores to finished rolls and parent rolls, automatic handling is your guide to overcoming the worst material handling headaches. Located in Erie, Michigan, Automatic Handling International has been providing advanced state-of-the-art equipment to the paper industry for over four decades. Automatic Handling's equipment makes management, operators, and maintenance smile. Elegant solutions, simple to operate and maintain. You get a feel for their dedication to advanced equipment design and advanced manufacturing when you visit their factory. Vertically integrated, the company can control every stage of a capital project from design and manufacture to full in-house runoffs and mill startups. You won't find a paper drawing anywhere in their plant. All manufacturing and assembly is directly linked to engineering and select suppliers. The assembly floor is instantly updated on any changes with extraordinarily large screens where technicians can see every piece, every assembly detail in 3D. This means your equipment can be custom designed and built for your operations while still providing extremely short lead times for your new solution from Automatic Handling. That's Automatic Handling International Incorporated, Erie, Michigan, USA. Visit them at www.automatichandling.com or call them at 734-847-0633. That's 734-847-0633. The following column was written by Jim Thompson. I'm Chuck Swan, reading it for Jim. The title of Jim's column this week is Energy Trends Outside the Fence. And here's what Jim has to say about that. In containerboard grades, relative cost position curves are becoming a metric of the past, not the future. Actually, what may happen is that they bifurcate into two distinct sets, one recycled mills and the other virgin mills. We're on the cusp of an era when putting them up against one another is meaningless. A bit of history to start with. For over 100 years, the railroads, then ground transportation, trucks that is, drove the performance specifications in the containerboard grades. The infamous Rule 41, which was promulgated in the late 1800s and was widely used until the mid-1990s, dictated box design. It was a specification tied to basis weight. Railroads and trucks did not mind the linkage, for most often their loads cubed out before they weighed out. This was far truer for railroads than trucks, but we'll not quibble over minor differences here. Three things happened in the 1990s. In our industry, strength specifications, instead of basis weight specifications, started making inroads into box design. The second thing was the founding of Amazon, which no one, not even Jeff Bezos, knew at the time was going to be such a behemoth in so many areas of commerce. The third material item to our discussion from the 90s was the maturing of the recycled paper mill design, which started popping up in several places, often carrying the moniker mini mill. Now, recycled containerboard grades could compete on an equal footing with virgin grades. No longer designated as jute or test liner grades, these new recycled products met the market where it was, not at some inferior tier. The recycled mills were built where the business is, not in the forest where the fiber supply is, as for the virgin mills. Their source of fiber came to be known as the urban forest, a term I first heard in 1988 and found laughable. It is not laughable any longer. To illustrate the radical impact on the industry the recycled mills have had, one need look no further than New York State. Since the mid-1990s, there have been 5 recycled containerboard machines built across this state, from Staten Island to Niagara Falls, with 3 machines thrown in for Solvay in the Syracuse area. Meanwhile, let's talk about venerable virgin-grade mills in the deep south, deep in the woods. The virgin mills are in trouble, and it is largely due to energy costs. First is the basic transportation issue. If you're going to purchase boxes in Chicago, for instance, probably the largest box market in the nation, you want your boxes made locally. The local box shops buy their containerboard feedstock from mills anywhere. After all, the price is delivered to their docks. The mills pay the freight. Hence, if you are a mill in Valparaiso, Indiana, Alsip, Illinois, or Green Bay, Wisconsin, it is likely you will have better mill nets, that is, the price the mill receives after freight cost, than if you are in, say, Southwest Georgia. Of course, mills have cooperated and traded product forever to reduce freight costs, but when that gets out of balance, not as much consumption in Southwest Georgia as there is in Chicago, problems exist. At the end of the day, the virgin mills in the woods cannot do trades to the extent to get themselves completely out of this freight, that is, energy cost problem. Then there is the Amazon problem. In case you haven't noticed, freight has moved from rail and truck to airplanes. Suddenly, basis weight matters. Suddenly, quick delivery matters. Suddenly, virgin mills in the woods are second-tier players, and none of this had anything to do with energy costs inside the fence. But there is something that does have to do with energy costs inside the fence, and it will bite the Virgin Mills as soon as they attempt to make the lightweight grades demanded by the market today. Their pulp mills, their self-generated electricity, their steam loads are all balanced for making 42-pound liner. A drop to 35-pound liner means their pulping, steam, and electrical generation capabilities are 20% too large. Add another machine? Not a good idea for a mill that is 60 years old and buried deep in the woods. As an industry, we went through a gut-wrenching change when the Internet took printing and writing and newsprint business. Next up for unfavorable winds, containerboard mills deep in the woods. The urban recycled mills even have a safety advantage. For in the unfortunate situation where someone is injured, they are likely very close to first-class hospital facilities. I once worked at a rural mill that was a solid one-hour ride to a hospital where the most likely action was to transfer you to a life flight helicopter for a ride to the city. Be safe, and we will talk next week. Nip Impressions is written by Jim Thompson and is copyright 2019, Papa Italo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.
Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Are you facing a complex installation, expansion, greenfield project, or maintenance project? Make the smart choice. Sierra Meyer, a nationwide industrial general contractor, specializes in the pulp and paper industry. Our skilled millwrights, pipe fitters, iron workers, boiler makers, carpenters, laborers, cement finishers, operators, and a team of experienced project managers, architects, and engineers are safe, effective, and efficient on any project, planned or unplanned. Take the smart step toward getting your next project finished safely and done well. Contact C.R. Meyer at crmeyer.com.
The following column was written by Jim Thompson. I'm Chuck Swan, reading it for Jim. Jim's title for this column is Coming Changes in Energy Consumption. And here's what Jim has to say about that. Land-grant colleges and universities were funded by the Morrill Acts of 1862 and 1890. The beginning of the agricultural revolution in the United States approximates these acts. When I say the agricultural revolution, I am referring to the phenomenal improvement in the productivity of agriculture that has occurred from the mid-19th century until today. We need to go no further than note that at the beginning of this period, over 98% of the population was engaged in agriculture. Today, less than 2% is, despite massive growth in the number of mouths to feed. Agriculture has always been ahead of industry in efficiency improvements. For many years, agriculture has been using the power of big computing, along with various sensors, to bring a new boost to efficiency. Tractors pulling planters are guided within 1-inch variation via GPS, with no humans touching the steering wheel. Sensors record the application of seed and fertilizer to a point of ever smaller resolution. Harvesting machinery uses this same data to record harvest to the same resolution and, in turn, put the data into next year's planting plan to constantly improve and hence miserly apply nutrients based on the previous year's harvest. Just what is needed, just where it is needed. Gone are the days of broadcast applications based on average conditions. We are just beginning to see these kinds of efficiencies applied to the pulp and paper industry and its ancillary components, printing, box making, tissue converting. But don't despair, help is coming. This help is coming in the form of the Internet of Things, or in manufacturing parlance, Industry 4.0. Paparitalo Publications saw this coming early and has launched a monthly newsletter, Industry 4.0, that's Industrie 4.0, our own trademark pending name, to recognize our focus on the pulp and paper industry. Suppliers are recognizing this coming revolution too. SAP, yes, that SAP, has partnered with Paparitalo Publications to communicate their own concepts and offerings in this area directly to you. In general, what do we see coming for the pulp and paper industry? The same types of resolution of understanding of discrete processes, that is, similar to agriculture, where the application of additives, thermal energy, vacuum, and other cost components can be done with precision and miserliness, thus avoiding the over-application currently practiced to compensate for lack of knowledge. Sensors, big data, and sophisticated analyses will squeeze the addition of other materials to the cellulose fiber in ways that we have never seen before. Think of it. We want only to take the cellulose fiber and make it into a certain grade of paper. Everything we add to this fiber is a cost. This includes steam, various additives, electrical energy, vacuum to take away what we just added, such as water, and so forth and so on. In the past, we have known no better than the gross application of everything because our real-time resolution on the process has been so grainy. Here at Paparitalo Publications, our sister organization, the Light Green Machine Institute, has been working for nearly 10 years to lighten the machinery load and consequently some components of the energy load. The Internet of Things, or Industry 4.0, is about to burst on the scene with ways to improve efficiency that we have never seen before, and it will do so through finer resolution, finer understanding of what goes on in our processes. This will affect our energy requirements in the future in ways we have never understood and hence never been able to apply. I think this is about to happen very quickly, putting pressure on older mills to adopt and adapt quickly in order to stay competitive. We just may catch agriculture yet. For safety this week, if we can see more with sensors, that will mean we humans will not have to get as close to the process. Sounds like a safety improvement to me. Be safe, and we will talk next week. Nip Impressions is written by Jim Thompson and is copyright 2019, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.